Hi, I'm Donna. All right, so step 8 and 9. You know, I love these steps. This is where the freedom comes from for me. You know, the first amends that I made were to my children. You know, they were the innocent victims in all this. You know, loading my son in the car, looking for my husband. You know, some nights I would take off and go to a hotel. Believe it or not, he didn't even know because he usually wouldn't come home. So in the morning, it was kind of a fruitless effort of loading all my stuff up and then, you know, coming home. So I decided that was kind of a useless thing. It didn't impact him. It impacted me, and it impacted my son at the time. You know, so the sitting down and, listening to their perspective of it individually, and their understanding was just amazing to me, and their love and compassion for it. So, you know, that was probably one of the most heartfelt amends that I made. And then going through my inventory, I realized that a lot of it was stuff that didn't sit with the person that I wanted to be, that I wanted to become, that I was creating out of doing this step work. And so one of the things that came up with was that I wasn't the daughter that I wanted to be. And so, So, you know, I spoke with my parents and I said, you know, hey, you know, we started talking about me not being there as much and not calling and just not being as present as I felt that I should be. And both of my parents were like, you're great. You know, what are you talking about? You know, and so I realized that it was more the feeling inside me that I wasn't being the person I wanted to be. So with that, I created a living amends to both my parents. And I started driving to their house because, you know, I didn't drag them through all of this. I didn't call my mom and say, you know, what's going on? I wasn't telling anybody what was going on. So nobody was dealing with the wreckage of our household. And nobody except me and the kids and him. So, you know, I started going up there. And I started spending time, and I started listening to my parents and listening to the stories of their life before they had kids. My parents had 4 kids in 5 years. And, yeah, crazy. They found out what birth control was. My dad got a vasectomy when my mom said she was pregnant with me. My dad said, we're solving this, getting a vasectomy. So, you know, it was chaotic. And there wasn't much money, and just listening to them and hearing their stories and, you know, my mom's stories of growing up in an alcoholic family. So there's healing in the stories, you know, like we've been talking about. So it was healing for them, and it was helpful for me to hear this. And, you know, we started going through, they wanted to start clearing out all the crap they'd collected over the years because, you know, they were getting older and they didn't want to, they wanted to start going through and clearing stuff out. And so, you know, I would watch my mom who had, you know, with growing, she was the one that had alcoholic parents and a lot of, you know, just a lot of baggage from that. And so, you know, I learned to watch her and when she would start shutting down from going through and cleaning out all the stuff, you know, I could see her physically change. And so, you know, we would stop and we would, you know, I'd say, hey, you know, why don't we stop doing this and go out and grab some lunch? And I became the daughter that I wanted to be. And we developed this really cool relationship because my parents had never really talked about what their life was like before. And so now my dad was my hero. My mom was just my mom. You know, she was just kind of always there in the background, somebody who I never really had a deep relationship with because she would just shut down emotionally a lot of times. And my dad was the cool guy. And so my focus more through all of this is my dad. And my mom had a lot of health issues. And so in my mind, you know, mom's going to die first, and then I'm going to get my dad. He's going to come move in with us. And I get to hang out with my dad till the end of days. Well, God has funny plans. And my dad, hit his head and had a brain bleed. And, you know, so all of this, he ends up passing. And holy shit, now I'm stuck with my mom. And, you know, I didn't really know what to do with that, but I knew that I needed to go up there and be there every week and be with her. And so I became, you know, the person that took her to the doctors, the person that listened and was there and helped her work through, you know, her pain. And developing a relationship like that with somebody who you don't really have an intimate relationship with was really, really a struggle for me. And it was really scary. And, but you know, God puts people in our lives that, that if we are awake enough to notice and we talk to, there's always someone who can be there for you. So I had talked to you about before about Pat Polins, and she had, a few years before my dad died, she had had, she'd gotten histoplasmosis and they misdiagnosed it. And she ended up, while they were still trying to figure it out, she had a stroke and then pretty much went blind from macular degeneration. So I became her, kind of her person that took her to the meetings and retreats, and we just had this great time. And she had a difficult relationship with her mom. And so the more we talked, you know, the more I talked about my fears, the more she started telling her story of how she built a relationship with her mom. And, you know, being the daughter that her sponsor had given her an assignment of, you know, maybe you weren't the daughter your mother needed. If you're disappointed in your mom, maybe your mom was kind of, you know, didn't connect because you, what kind of a daughter were you to her? And so I started looking at that, and, you know, I started becoming the daughter that I thought my mom needed. And we developed this really beautiful relationship. I never knew my mom was funny. My mom was funnier than shit, you know? But I never knew it because my dad was always my focus. So, you know, I did this amazing, I developed this amazing relationship with my mom that I never, ever thought I'd have. You know, I never desired to have this relationship with my mom. And, you know, Pat had almost 51 years in Al-Anon. She was 1 month short when she died. And, you know, it's really important to look around and see how many people God puts in your life to help you work through different difficult situations. And if we're awake enough to listen and get out of our pain and our fear, you know, these people are here for us. And, you know, it's just when my mom ended up dying, she used to always tell me, she goes, I want to die in my own bed. I want to die in my home, in my bed, in my sleep. I'm like, well, okay, Mom. You know, I can't do that for you, but I got a pillow. I can work on that. And, you know, and so every once in a while I'd pick up a pillow and look at her and kind of smile. And, you know, I didn't smother my mom, though. She did. She did die in her bed, in her home, in her sleep, on Thanksgiving night, actually. And, you know, my brother called me. My oldest brother was up there having Thanksgiving with her. And he called that morning. And it was like she got everything she wanted. She died in perfect peace. And the one thing that was really cool when I was doing some reflecting on it is There was absolutely nothing left unsaid between either one of my parents and I. So I don't have this emptiness of I should have been a better daughter. I should have been there. I should have listened more. I should have. And, you know, because nothing was left unsaid, because when I did the work and I realized that this person that I was trying to, the person that I always felt like God wanted me to be, you know, that I was created to become. And, you know, when I listened to that, you know, part of it was being a better daughter. And so, you know, I'm really, really grateful that I didn't just, oh, I'm too busy, there's not enough time for this. I listened to it, and I followed through with it, and it's just absolutely amazing. And then one of the other, you know, amends that was kind of difficult, my brother Mike that I mentioned earlier, that he is a retired Baptist minister. He's been on my fourth step a lot over the years. And about the third inventory I did, I was doing some, and you know, the good thing is I didn't act out of a lot of the pain. Now, he created a lot of pain in my life when I was younger. But, you know, I kind of ignored him as an adult human being. You know, if I didn't talk to him for an extended period of time, because it was always rough. Our difficulties were, you know, he would always judge me for my faith, and we had some interesting conversations. But we came to a place where we decided never to talk about religion, and he agreed, and I agreed to it. And so I started loving him where he was at. So if I couldn't talk about religion to him, you know, I started looking at what were his interests in life. And I would just periodically call him and talk to him about chickens. And so, you know, I mean, we could talk about chickens, and that was one of the few safe things we could talk about. Because I judged him as a father. I didn't think he was a very good dad, because he just pretty much abandoned his two kids, and you know, they had a very loving mom, and he just didn't fulfill his dad role. And but he fulfilled it to the best of his ability at that time. And that's what I've come to understand, is that he had so much pain from his divorce and all of the mess around that, that he was doing the best that he could. And I have to understand that that was how he dealt with his pain. And it wasn't the way I would have dealt with it, and it made me sad and all of that, but I can't judge his pain, and I can't judge how he is. So, you know, we started talking about chickens, and his wife's Korean, and I asked him about Korean food, and he drove up from Tucson, and we went out, and she explained, went to a Korean restaurant, and she explained all these dishes. And so I started developing this relationship, again, with somebody that I didn't have a relationship with, but I want to be a better human being. And I want to be, you know, some sort of a sister to him. And, you know, and I had to let more for myself than for him. I had to let go of the resentments I had against him. And that was the important part. And in order to do that, I had to develop a relationship with him so I could let go of those resentments and I could see him as a fallible human being that he was, instead of, you know, this person that I made up in my mind that, you know, abandoned his children. He didn't abandon his children. He just couldn't face what was going on in his life. And then, you know, the other one that is most poignant in our lives, both of us, is, you know, our oldest son gets married. He's in recovery. He marries somebody in recovery. We have this perfect little recovery family, you know. We got this little cute granddaughter, and life happens, you know. And, you know, their marriage falls apart. And out of her pain and her fear, it got really nasty. And there were a lot of things that happened that were just not right and not okay. But I don't have to hold on to those. And I don't have to look at that and take on her pain and her fears. I can look at her as the person that she is. And she's actually an amazing woman. And she's a good mom. You know, she was just in a lot of fear and pain at that time. And we made a conscious decision and to just be who we are, no matter what. And sometimes, you know, when things happen in life and people out of their own pain and woundedness, you know, can do and say things that are harmful. And, you know, but with working through that with another person, you can see the pain in them and you can understand it. And so we made a decision that no matter what was said, what was done, we were just going to focus on having a relationship with our granddaughter. And part of that was, you know, going to my mom and talking to my mom about how she dealt with, you know, the disappointment of, you know, one of her sons and that the divorce that happened and the pain that came with that. And my mom always told me, she goes, don't take sides, you know, and just keep your eye on what the end result is. And the end result is always keeping, you know, a relationship with my grandchildren. And so, you know, again, God puts people in my life, if I'm willing to talk about what's going on, that can help me heal and can help guide me through these difficult times. And, you know, today we have an amazing relationship with our ex-daughter-in-law. She's, and we've had to do a lot of work. And with us being able to let go and not hold on to the pain and the resentment and the fears, she's been able to heal. And she's been able to, you know, because it's like, man, when two people are just going at it, it's like they're both in opposite corners and they're both just, you know, they're fearful. Their back's against the wall and one person takes a few steps forward and then they get fearful and they say something and then they go back to their corners. And it's just this incredibly, you know, destructive, horrible dance. But if someone stops dancing and they stay and they just let it settle, it's going to settle on its own. And that's what I've learned over this period of time is if I don't engage in somebody else's behavior, it eventually will settle and it will become okay. And so, you know, it's just most of my amends have been more on the living amends side. And because I want to be a better human being, I want to be the person that God intended me to be. And God didn't intend me to be this angry, you know, resentful person. And so, you know, I love, you know, step 8 and step 9 are just, and you know, the more I do it, the shorter my list gets, which is nice. Because the first time it was like, holy cow. And, you know, that's the goal, you know, is not to have, you know, a long 8-step list. And, you know, the more we heal, the more we become the people that we're meant to be, the shorter that list is meant to get. And so with that, I'll pass it.
Thank you. I'm Terry. I'm an addict. I'm so glad to be here talking about this topic. So in this woman who is a friend of mine in Donna, she ran a homeless shelter. And she had a sign in her office that said, I wonder what pain in that person's life gives rise to that behavior. And man, what a cool thing to be able to hold on to, right? So steps 8 and 9 are amazing. My experience as a sponsor is that that is the place that I have lost the vast majority of my sponsees. It is at 8 and 9 that they seem to fall off significantly more so than any other step. Because, you know, it's kind of, we can admit our powerlessness, work our way through the steps. But when it comes to making amends, when it comes to paying back the money, when it comes to doing the right thing, that's a little tougher part. So when Donna talked about her brother, it tripped this memory of mine. So at his church, he told me, he goes, oh, yeah, I think I'm going to let AA in now that I see you're sober, you're a good guy. And then he comes to me and he goes, I had to kick AA out. I said, what happened? He goes, well, I walked in there and they were all there. And I said, are y'all here to declare Jesus Christ your Lord and Savior? Because if y'all will pray with me, you can keep this meeting space. Strange dude, right? So learning to accept people where they are. And then Donna talked about her daughter-in-law. So, you know, I'm the protector of my family. I love my wife. I want to protect her. I want to protect my son. When they split, they dated for 10 years, got married, had our granddaughter, Scarlett. At 1 year of age, they divorced. Who the hell does that? Who dates for 10 years, gets married, gets divorced? It was terrible. So she was just vicious at times. She would say horrible things about my son or horrible things that she wanted to share them with us, say horrible things about my lineage, you know, because I had a brother who had molested and she just wanted to try to tag anybody with anything dirty, nasty, negative, all unfounded, just like vicious human being. And we decided that the most important thing in that equation was that little girl. And that we wanted to have our home be a safe place, not just for that baby, but for her and for our son. So that whenever they needed to do anything, they could bring her here and that we were never going to engage. And that's a hard thing to do when somebody's attacking, you know, your family in such vicious ways. And then at one point she decided she was going to leave the state and go to New York and take our granddaughter. And her and my son worked out a deal for a while. And my little grandbaby at like 2 years of age said to me, Papa, I don't want to go. And all I could say was, baby, it's going to be okay. So me and Donna loved this woman. Then we go visit our granddaughter in New York. And we did everything we could to be the best people that we possibly could be. And I'm leaning on my sponsor. I'm leaning on my spiritual advisor. I'm talking to my priest. I'm talking to just like, man, when she attacks, I don't want to respond. When she goes off on Donna, Donna would turn her to me. You know, just doing the best we could with this whole situation. And then the wheels came off her life in New York. The man she was with became abusive. And by now, she had turned on everybody in her life, and she had nobody. And so she said, I need to come home. My son flew to New York to pick up my grandbaby. She comes back to Arizona with no job, no place to live, and no one to call because her anger and her bitterness had just driven everybody away in her life. And so she reached out to me and Donna and said, we'll be at the airport to pick you up. And when she came down that walkway into the area where we could greet people, it was me and Donna standing there, and she fell into my arms. And we both wept. And we talked about, I told her, like, don't link your problems, because what's what people do. It's like, I don't have a job, I don't have money, I don't have a place, I don't have any love, I don't have anything. And you know, you can link everything up in such a way to where the weight of the chain feels so heavy you can't even move. And that's where she was. And I told her, hold on. Let's take them one thing at a time. We got a place you can stay. Fell out of job app. She was a teacher. Oh, my license is expired. Don't worry. You start with a phone call and helped her figure out the path forward. Because you know what it's like to be so jammed up you don't know what to do? I know that feeling. And that's why we need each other, right? And in a real way, man, every man I've ever sponsored has sponsored me. And we all work together in community to do the right thing. So peace, harmony, you know, you name it. It just unfolded in the way that it does in God's world. Donna buys a house. She sees an ad for a beautiful townhome in a really nice neighborhood and buys it. So my daughter-in-law and my grandbaby can live in a safe neighborhood at a rent they can afford because she's going to be working as a waitress somewhere. She calls the school district, hey, am I eligible to substitute teach? I'm a first grade teacher. And while she's talking, The woman standing next to her overhears the conversation, not her, the lady on the other end, the school board, hears that she was just appointed principal of a school and had a first grade teacher just quit. And she was a single mom. And she said, tell that woman to come in and interview with me right away. And Michelle had taught kindergarten for her years before. And the next thing you know, that school was less than a mile away from that house. All of these things, right? So how elaborate is God's plan? Think about that question. How elaborate was God's plan to get you here to this retreat? How elaborate was God's plan that allowed all of those things to happen? So last I'll tell you about that story with Michelle is that as a result of that divorce, which seemed like one of the worst things ever, we ended up with our granddaughter for a third of the time. And over the course of time, Donna became the most important person to this little girl. Still is. You know, just this incredible loving relationship. And this girl's filled with wild adventures, right? Just the greatest spirit. And for her 11th birthday, so she just turned 14 a few days ago. For her 11th birthday, now there was a lot of bad feelings between her and my son and her mom. And everybody was trying to get anybody, but we used the principles of this program every day in that relationship. And so they invited us to dinner. So we go to this really nice steakhouse in Phoenix, and me and Donna are driving there, and we're going to meet our son and his new wife, her and the daughter-in-law and her new husband, the mother-in-law, the aunt, my granddaughter. We're all going to have dinner together for the first time. 10 years. I called my sponsor when the weight of what was happening occurred, that by walking this peaceful path, the 12-step path, by walking it for all those years, our family had healed. We go to baseball games now, and our granddaughter's a pretty good player, right? And we go there, and when the games are over, nobody wants to leave. We all like to hang and talk with each other. But as we're on our way to that restaurant, I called my sponsor. Here's my spiritual advisor, priest back then. And I said, Father John, I said, do you remember all those talks when Michelle was being so mean? He goes, yeah, of course I remember those talks. I said, well, I just want you to know that we are on our way to meet all of them for dinner. And I said, I just want you to know something, Father John. If you would have told me, because I said, do you remember what you told me? You told me, if I trust God and keep doing the next right thing, everything will work out. Do you remember that? He goes, of course I remember telling you that. I said, well, John, I want you to know, if you would have told me it would take 10 years, I would have told you to fuck yourself. And so the amends could be divided up into a couple areas. One, general amends. Amends to the universe, right? Specific amends, exact wrongs that I did. And I've done plenty of exact wrongs. I've done plenty of general wrongs. I'll give you a general wrong. We were going fishing. I would make fun of people sometimes. I felt like I was a nice person, but I didn't mind making fun of somebody else if the situation was right. So we went, we were going fishing in Sedona, Arizona. They got this fish farm. So we go to the fish farm, and there's this old guy there, right? And he's got like three teeth in his mouth, and he's cutting up this bait that's bright green that's in cookie sheets. And he gives you the bait to go fish in, and he goes, I got the patent on this bait. It's got all the vitamins and nutrients to sustain life. And when the famine comes, I'm going to sell the patent and I'm going to be a billionaire. And it tastes good too. And he breaks off a piece of this bait and he sticks it in his mouth and he chews it up, right? And okay, that was kind of interesting. So we go fishing, but you know, with fishing in the days goes drinking, right? So I'm fishing and I'm drinking, I'm fishing and I'm drinking. And when we get done fishing, we go back and they'll clean the fish for you there too, right? And there were a bunch of people. It was a Saturday afternoon and the old guy's there. There's a crowd and I couldn't resist it. I saw a piece of the bait on the deck of the dock. I picked it up and I said, excuse me, folks, you see this here bait? I got the patent on it. I got the vitamins and nutrients that sustain life, and it tastes good too. And I popped it in my mouth. I bit into it, and oh! And I spit it in my hand, and it had a cream filling. And the old guy looked at me and said, "Boy, that wasn't bait. That was duck shit." which is a fabulous metaphor for life, right? Because I thought the joke was on you. In the end, I always eat. Ended up eating shit. So why do I bring that up? Because I have made it my life's mission to be kind and loving to everybody I encounter. I want to cause no more harm. The world is heavy. There are people walking around carrying loads. There are people in here right now, if you knew what they were facing right now, life's hard sometimes. There are times in my life where life is so hard and I'm under so much pressure and stress. So I don't want to add to the suffering of another human being. And through the amends process, I've been able to become a much gentler, kinder man. But there are some amends that are never done. There are amends that will take a lifetime and that are part of the lifetime process. How do I make amends to my sons? They were 7 and 3. I robbed their childhood. They were afraid, not of me because I wasn't a violent man, but they were afraid of the instability, right? So I was given a talk when my oldest son was in the audience. So this is, you know, he was probably 5 years sober at the time. And I gave a talk and I said, you know, one thing I didn't do is I didn't bring the disease home. You know, because I'd smoke my crack and drink my liquor in the bars. I'd smoke my crack in the car. And, you know, I, in my mind, told myself that I was a pretty good provider, husband, father, even though you've heard enough of the story to know that might be called delusion. So I give that talk, and that night when we're driving home, my son said, "Dad, that was a really good talk." He said, "But there's one part of your story you might want to rethink." I said, "What's that?" He goes, "The part about not bringing it home." He said, "Dad, I was a 6-year-old boy with stomach ulcers." He said, "Second graders don't get ulcers, but they did in my house." Donna has been very merciful to me as she tells her story. She didn't tell me this story till I was probably 20 years sober. And it was the story of every time I would leave in the first few years of my sobriety. I would go to leave. Okay, I'm going to go run some errands. I'll be back. Or I'm going to catch a meeting and I'll be back at, you know, 8:30 or 7. And then I'd say goodbye to the family and head out. I'm on solid ground going to my meetings, working my recovery. What Donna didn't share with me is that a little boy who could barely tell time would watch the clock. And if 7 o'clock came and I was supposed to be there at 7, at 7:05, he was pulling on his mom. "Where's Dad?" "I thought you said he'd be here at 7. How do you make amends for doing that to your child? I know by not whipping my own ass, I know that that's not part of the solution. But it's about being a present, loving father. It's about when my kids are there putting my phone away. It's about being a part of their lives and developing a relationship. And I've had a great teacher in Donna. Because Donna taught me through the story of her brother and through her uncle and others that Donna taught me how to love people right where they're at, however they are. And, you know, it took a long time in recovery to build a trusting relationship with my older son. But today we have one. And my little boy, Donna, taught me the lessons to pay extra attention to him because he was the forgotten child. That when Devin was in trouble with his alcoholism and addiction, we'd focus on him, but we'd ignore the other one. So how did I make amends? I went to my son, was a good athlete. He liked to play football. I went to every practice and every game. You know, and I got to be there for them in those kinds of ways. So how do you make amends to my mother, my father? My mom died in 71. My dad died in 89, and I got sober in 91. How do you make amends to parents who you robbed their peace of mind? How do I make amends to Donna and the kids for the peace of mind I stole? That doesn't show up on an inventory, but it sure shows up upon a deeper analysis as you work with others. It reveals itself. And at night, I remember when we were going to premarital counseling. So we go there and we meet with the pastor before he'd marry us. And he said, one of you are going to be the door checker. And that's the person that checks the doors and makes sure they're all locked every night before you go to bed. That was my job. I was the door checker. But as a result of all the step work and inventory and analysis and amends that I've made, what I realized is that when I would go to check those doors to lock them at night, I was locking the monster on the inside. The person who was causing the harm to my loved ones was me. How do you make amends for that? I got a simple answer for you. How do I make amends for my mother who was so tormented? You know, get out of here, you make me sick. You remember that from step one. How do you make amends for putting a dying woman through that? What the answer is simply this. I sponsor a lot of men. And whenever I get so many men to come, well, I got a real problem with my dad. I go, sit down. I got a real problem with my mom. Well, sit down, because let me tell you what, it is a lot better to make amends in the living years than it is beyond the grave. But this program will work beyond the grave too, right? How to make amends. My father was a good and decent man, like I've told you before. And I used to think that all these bad thoughts about my dad, right, and that he never really lifted me up. But when I was in the military, I was a heavy equipment combat engineer crane operator. And I was in meditation one day, and I'm sitting there with my dad in the car. And this prick dad that I had to forgive, you know, the one who was faithful, the one who did all the things I didn't do, we were driving out. He also taught me how to go visit the elders, the grandmas, the old aunts, the old people, and to go do yard work and clean up their house and do chores and bring them their favorite foods. This man was a Jedi of a father who taught me those things. And we were driving out to visit his mom. And it was a long haul, you know, like 60, 70 miles. And as we're driving, this time I'm in meditation. My dad's been dead for years, and I'm meditating. And my dad looks out and he goes, wow, there's a crane over there. There's another crane over there, son. Hey, look, there's another crane. And all the way on that drive, he pointed out every construction crane he saw, because he knew it was like, that was the best he could do to relate to me. What a blessed man I was. So I've learned to, and when I came out of that meditation, I was soaked in tears, but grateful as I could ever be for this relationship that I have with my father today. Because the steps and making amends and helping other men get right with their fathers, I got right with mine. People say, how do you and Donna have some, we work with couples all the time when they're jammed up and they're ready to divorce or they're in each other's ass. They want to come over and we'll sit with them and we'll share with them our experience, strength, and hope, because you can't keep it unless you give it away. Whatever it is you've got, and every one of us have a unique story, and that's really what we all have. In someone else's story, we find our own healing. So on more specific things, you know, how do you make... So I was in the finance business. And I had pocketed some money to go fill a prescription to get some dope. And they counted the drawer, so the money was gone. But I was able to slick them in the way they counted the drawer. Oh, somebody made an error, bank error in my favor, whatever. It wasn't my fault, right? And so I had stolen from this employer. I had robbed my own house and turned in an insurance claim and gotten a check for thousands of dollars. Hope I didn't give anybody any ideas. So I'd rob my own house, right? So I get sober and I think, okay, I got to make this right. Well, it's a lot of money. I don't have any money. It took a long time. I had to save money for 6 years to get the money to pay this back. And then if you could get a money order for under $200, you didn't have to show ID. And me and my sponsor talked about it, that it would do no good to go to that insurance company, turn myself in for insurance fraud. Because if they arrest me, that's not going to help. It's not going to help my kids. It's not going to help Donna. So I started saving these money orders. I'd go buy a $200 money order, and then I had a stack of them about that high. And then I called to get the address. They put me through to a supervisor. I go, I'm ready to send this money, and I tell him the story that is part of my amends. He goes, hey, look, buddy, forget it. We don't need that. I said, that's not one of my options. And he said, well, just send it to a charity. And I go, I didn't steal it from a charity. And then he said, I'll tell you what, man. I'm going to give you an address. Send half of it to me. You keep half. Oh, shit. I said, dude, I ain't doing that either. So I wrote a letter explaining that I was in 12-step program of recovery, a member of AA and CA, and that I was sending this money as part of my 9-step, sending it anonymously with a stack of money orders. And then, of course, I waited for their reply. Of course, it was anonymous. There's no reply coming. But my ego was thinking, oh, my God, isn't somebody going to throw me a parade? Look at what I've just done. So I sent back that money, right, anonymously with 6 years of sobriety. And then I had to face, so in my career, though, if you can't get bonded, you can't work. So I knew I had to do it. There was this one manager, and he was a good dude, and I had stolen some money. They're a great company. I think I had stolen about $100. So I made an appointment to come see him. By now, I'm the top guy in my career. I'm the best in the world at what I do, and I'm not talking shit. I just became that because clean and sober, practicing the spiritual principles, people trust you. They go, why is it and how is it you can sell so many people? I said, because people buy from people they like and trust. And I'm likable and I'm trustworthy. But I had this deal I had to go deal with, knowing that if this cat blows the whistle, I'm done. So I got $300, a money order for $300. And it's really important that you hear that part because there's nothing worse than having somebody come to you, oh, I owe you an amends. You know, I stole some money from you, but not bring the money. You know, oh, my mom won't want it. They won't take it. No, man, it's our job to pay it. That's the deal. I call that, or the first thing when I get a man in the inventory, first thing he wants to do is make inventory. He wants to make amends to her, the ex, right? I got to go make amends there. I go, yeah, uh-huh. I got the idea, you gotta check your motives, but I made up a word. I made up my own word in the 9-step, and it is called premature amendulation. And so like that's it, right? I wanna go see her. I'm so sorry for it usually doesn't happen like that. So I mean it's insane, right? So you gotta bring the money when you go forward. So I go and I meet this guy in his office and I tell him the story and I tell him, hey man, I'm here to make this right. I said, I stole money from you. And he's sitting there, and this guy was so successful, his office and the view of the mountains. And I said, nah, you know, you believed in me, and I did you wrong, and I'm clean and sober, and I know I need to face this. And I handed him a check for $300. I said, I only took $100, but I know if you had $100, you would have turned it into $3. And so here's the $300. And he leaned back in his chair like this, looked up, and then the tears started pouring down his face. And he said, I knew I was right about you. And then he said, hey, man, I'd like to offer you a job. Will you run all my finances office for all my dealerships? And I looked at him, I said, no, I wouldn't. I'm not here for a job. I'm here to make things right. I ended up retiring from a job I never applied for because that's how it works. Because when we trust God, I don't know what your story is going to be, but here's what I found is that I go all the way in and I give everything that I've got. Amazing things happen. So 15 years sober, I'm trail running. I'm strong. Oh, I feel like King Kong, right? And I'm running the trails, and I go, God. And right across the trail, this coyote crosses. And he stands with his chest out overlooking the city of Phoenix. And I thought, oh, man, look at what God's doing for me. Look at that omen, this beautiful day. And I go, God, I'm so grateful for you. I'm glad I've made all my amends. And then I hear, what about those guys you fucked over in Germany? I don't even remember their names, Curry and Dean. I don't remember the ranks, E4 and E5. And then, right, this is happening. So it had been behavior that was 30 years old. It never shown up on inventory. And 30 years old, it all comes up. I mean, it took 30 years for this wrong to percolate to my consciousness, and it took 30 seconds for my diseased mind to give me a list. They could sue you, you'll lose everything, bury it. But at that time, a dude who was really influential in Arizona had just died of an overdose. And I knew that he was somewhere where I was in that moment, faced with something from the past that he wanted to conveniently sweep under the rug. And I thought to myself, God, I don't want to do that. Please let me remember this amends when I get to the bottom of this run. God, thank you that there's only that. And then I heard, what about abortion? Never occurred to me that that was something for an inventory. I got off that mountain that day with two of the heaviest of men standing in front of me that I ever faced. I called not my sponsor. My sponsor was a badass, Howard P. He was like really into energy and cosmic rotation and a brilliant man. But I needed to reconcile my behavior with my faith, right? I'm a Christian. I needed to reconcile with that. I knew what Howard would say. I'd heard him talk about abortion before, that you can't take life, it just changes forms and all that. Well, that's great for him, but I wasn't looking for an ass whipping, but I wanted the peace. And so I called my priest friend and I made an appointment. And then I wrote the military and I got all my records. And I proceeded to make amends for things that were so big that they were terrifying. But I had enough experience behind me, not just my stories, but some of your stories that I could hold on to know that this would work. I have a sponsee of mine who recently made this amends. I take him through the steps. He's sober a few years, so I told him about a year ago, I go, bro, we're about due to work those steps again, man. He was jammed up about some things with life. And so when we sat down to do his first step, I looked at him, I said, have you ever made amends to those people? Those people are this story. There was a family, and he's a blackout drinker. He got so hammered, he breaks into a house. He goes in, he starts smashing all the family portraits. He opens the nightstand in the daughter's room and pisses in the nightstand. He goes upstairs, the man hears the commotion. He comes out with his gun and the guy charges him and the man beats him unconscious with the gun. I said, did you ever make amends to those people? He goes, I don't think I can contact them. I'll never be able to find them. I said, what was their name? Social media. I go, is that them? He goes, oh, my God. I said, it's time, bro. Your problem that you're having is not with the need for steps again. It's that you haven't finished your ninth step. And so that night, he sent him a note. He was a new father then. He'd been sober for years. And he wrote them a letter explaining how broken, how sorry he was, how he understood what that must have been like to have your home invaded while your children are sleeping, and how sorry he was for what he had done. And when he was done sending him the note through Messenger, he threw the phone across the room for fear of what was going to come back, for fear that it was going to be you. What'd you do to our lives? That was what his fear was, because fear is always the thing that tries to prevent me from growth. The only thing that stops me in my life is my fear, right? That's the only thing that limits God in my life is my fear. What he got back was this. Clearly, I'm so happy to hear that you took that horrible incident that rocked our family and that you've used it as a positive turning point in your life. She goes, I know God's got something in store for you, because when we woke up and heard you downstairs, my husband got his .357 Magnum and he reached for his bullets that are always in the same place right next to him, and he could not find the bullets. And he knew he had no more time, so he left that bedroom to defend me with that weapon and to use it as a club. And when you came at him, he beat you unconscious with that. He would have shot and killed you. We talked that night. Where had his bullets been? And the next morning we looked, and the bullets were exactly where they always were. She said God had made those bullets invisible to my husband that night to give you a chance at life. The power of these steps, think of your own experience. If you have any amends undone, do them. Don't be afraid to face them, but never face them alone. Every amend I've ever done, I've worked out with my sponsor. We've strategized it. We've gone about it with the right kind of intent, the right kind of prayer behind it. And the last thing I'll say is that there's a lot of word tracks that drift around recovery, and I don't know what the word tracks are, if they are around here. But words like, I'm sorry that I committed this amends, I got it on three, but this is four. And I'm not knocking any way anybody did their steps. But to me, I think it's very important to speak the language of the heart. We're at the Language of the Heart retreat, where we can say, hey, I did you so wrong. Amends isn't a word used in society. It's used by us. I'm sorry. I was wrong. I harmed you. You know, I am so sorry. So I got to speak from my heart to the heart. And so the process of making amends has been one of the most freeing things that I've known in my life. By doing the amends, truly, it has set my spirit free. So I am not going to tell you that sitting here with 33 years that they're all done, but they are. But I'm afraid to say that shit to the universe because I don't know what else is there, because Bill promised us one of the most important lines in the big book is more will be revealed. We'll see you after dinner for steps 10 and 11. Anything else, Tarek?
Send your questions.
Thank you.